Words on Water.
Welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. This is the host, Travis Loop. Thrilled to be here with the winner of the U.S. Stockholm Junior Water Prize, Sonia Micheluk. Sonia, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
We should tell everybody we are in Stockholm, Sweden. You are here for the International Stockholm Junior Water Prize competition. You got to be feeling excited about that.
Yeah, very excited to be here right now.
Yeah. Part of the prize for winning the U.S. competition was this trip and getting to come here. I had the chance of coming to a couple of the U.S. competitions before and meeting the students, and I just want to say that I've been blown away by how brilliant you all are. I mean, you're doing like PhD or higher level work, so I'm excited to learn more about your project. So what was your research? What was your project that you have won this award for?
I came up with the first global standard method for freshwater bioassessment. So by looking at the health of water, we can make informed environmental decisions regarding land protection and land usage. This new method will give you more precise, more accurate data with higher statistical power. Higher statistical power means that you can have less data and see the same effects, or have more data and see more precise effects, more smaller changes over time in the health of a body of water. I'm using bioindicators. The particular bioindicator I'm working with for this project, or worked with for this, is the chironomid. And my method proposes an all-chironomid approach to freshwater bioassessment. Because they're so versatile and because they're a common denominator across all sorts of waterways on every continent, at every sort of altitude, for all sorts of geology. Because of that, they can be used to assess waterway health by looking at the species of chironomid present. And because they're so versatile and they've evolved to fill all sorts of ecological niches, you can look and they will show you almost like a cumulative summary of the health of the waterway. It'll show you the effects of nutrient pollution, all sorts of non-point source pollution, dissolved oxygen, temperature, channel morphology, it'll tell you about the geology. Just by looking at these, looking at the presence or the absence of certain species in family chironominae. So chironomids are...
I was going to ask you what chironomids are, because that was the only word you've said that I was like, wait, what is that? I don't even know. And we forgot to say this in the beginning. You're a high school student,
yes.
Right? So what year are you going to be going into?
I'm 16 and I'll be going into senior year.
Senior year of high school, okay. Mm-hmm. And you're in New Jersey?
Yeah.
And what's your high school? We have to give a recognition.
Hopewell Valley Central High School.
Hopewell Valley Central High School. Okay. And where is that in New Jersey?
It is in the Hopewell Township in Mercer County. Think right between Princeton and Trenton.
Okay. All right. Good
Close
deal.
Close to the Delaware, right by Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right. Back to the chironomids. What are those?
Chironomidae is the Latin name for the non-biting midge. They are an order Diptera. They are a fly larva. And as mentioned before, they are very, very versatile. There's an estimated 10,000 species of them worldwide, and species continue to be discovered.
Okay. And so by looking at them, you can tell a lot about the health of that freshwater body, that stream or lake or whatever it might be.
Yes. See, by looking at the species of them present, there's something called the biotic index. It's a score from 0 to 10 that is assigned to a family or a genus of organisms that shows how tolerant it is to certain pollutants and to environmental stress. For example, if it has a 10, that means it's extremely tolerant. If it has a 0, that means it's very sensitive. The family biotic index for the chironomid is a 6. However, if you look at the individual genera, they range from 0 to 10. So you have the full range in this one family, which is very impressive considering, because there are some families that stay towards the higher end of the spectrum and others that kind of stay towards the middle. So you've got the full range in this one family. That just shows how versatile they are.
You can use that spectrum, like you said, then, to tell a lot about the health of that
yes.
waterway. So how did you come up with this idea to use these flies, chironomids, as a way to measure freshwater health?
It's a bit of a long story, actually.
That's okay. We have a couple minutes here.
So I've been doing freshwater bioassessment for nearly a decade now. I started when I was around 6 years old. And when I was 8 years old, I started teaching other people bioassessment and how to monitor the health of water. To this day, I have my own curriculums and I teach classes. I train people to monitor water. And I also present at a variety of venues.
Now, let me ask you, when you were six, what were you assessing then?
I was just using the New Jersey State procedure. This was all at my own initiative.
Sure.
For fun. I always love playing in creeks.
Science is awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fascinating.
And super fun. It's my hobby.
Yeah.
I was also looking at the biological health and also measuring things like non-point source pollution. Then when I was about 11 years old, I started working in public policy. I found that one site that I liked to work on noticed it was declining in health. And I started to wonder why. And I started looking at other ways to monitor it. I did a plethora of kind of smaller projects targeting that one site. I got called upon by people in my area to present my data in front of like the town board when it comes to debating land use topics. I've done a lot of work on Princeton and the Princeton Ridge, work on a couple other areas in New Jersey, where I bring in the data because I want to make data the language of the debate.
Mm.
I often see that a lot of arguments are not science or fact-based. Even when it comes to something like land usage, people come in and bring their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So I would bring in the data. Often I would get asked to bring it in, and then after presenting the data, you have a better feel for how infrastructure might affect the land and the organisms around it.
That's awesome to hear, because you're totally right that many of the debates that happen in our communities and our states and our country are emotion-based or whatever people feel or think or want or are motivated by. And, you know, science is a great guide for how we should do so many things.
And then I began the quest for finding ways to gather better data.
Okay.
I dabbled in continuous sensors that would monitor water, various preservation methods in aquavertebrates, various curriculums and training programs. About 3 years ago, I came across a technology called DNA barcoding. So we extract the DNA from an organism.
Mm-hmm.
You would then amplify the DNA in a polymerase chain reaction. And you send it in for sequencing, and this it costs a couple dollars a sample. You would get your sequence back, and you actually have the raw sequence. You actually see the individual nucleotides lined up. And from there, you can match it to pre-existing identified sequences and databases and compare your sample genetically to those and figure out exactly what you have down to species level.
Mm.
And a big issue with macroverse, the reason for citizen science, you have to family level, is it is very difficult to get down to genus or species level, especially with some families like the chironomid, where there are a lot of cryptic species. Then I had noticed, so I have built up many sites that I sample over the years, and at one point I came back from all my sites, and the way you do it is you would come back with your macroinvertebrates, you put them in a tray, and you roll a die. And depending on the squares you choose, this prevents bias on the ones that you will identify.
Mm.
And I was noticing that every site had like a common denominator, the chironomidae. They were just on every site. And when I put them next to each other, they all looked different. They had different colorations, different markings, different shapes, but they're all yet the same chironomidae. And this is interesting considering they have a biotic index of 6. You always mark it as a 6 when you calculate the overall score of health for a stream. And the reason you can't easily go down to genus or species level is that would be expensive. You would need more equipment, and then it would no longer be a citizen science project.
Mm, right.
And there, for all of the water monitoring we need to do, there certainly aren't enough expert taxonomists out there.
Sure.
I started investigating the chironomid, and I learned that it's actually a global common denominator as well. They're everywhere, every continent.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, taking back to the beginning, this is a globally applicable method that
yes.
can be used.
And I also learned that there actually isn't a current global Lie-applicable method. Because there are so many different factors. So, for example, I use the New Jersey impairment score, which is different than other scores, say, if I was in a different state or even in a different country.
Yeah, for what constitute an impaired waterway and that so forth.
This would put them all on the same level.
Yeah.
If you wanted to compare waterways.
How have you gone about learning all this and all of the different things you've learned, but then specifically about chironomids or whatever it might be? Is this just self-research on the internet? Are, you know, teachers at school or professors at university? Or, yeah, where, how are you doing this?
Pretty much self-research, honestly. Yeah. I read so many articles, and I found that chironomidae are such a perplexing topic for many entomologists. People are fascinated by them.
By that range of...
Because there's such a range, because they're so versatile, because they can be so difficult to identify. One study showed actually that 65% are incorrectly identified by looking at their morphology just by hand. I also read another thing that said the proper way to identify one is you boil it first, you decapitate it, and you mount its head on a pin. And then you start to slowly kind of dissect each layer off.
Have you tried that method?
No, I have not.
Right.
Not the boiling part.
Yeah, yeah.
Not in the kitchen.
Why do you care about freshwater ecology and freshwater health? You know, why? What's your motivation for studying this stuff and coming up with methods?
Water is a topic that's always interested me. Always grew up by the water, always loved the water. My family, we sail, so I kind of always on the water. Felt like a special connection. I've been swimming, honestly, before I could walk. Growing up, always been by the Delaware River, so a pretty good freshwater body of water where a lot of people in my region and all the states around actually get their drinking water. I also had like a little creek running through my yard, and childhood was being with my sister and splashing in the creek and lifting rocks and finding salamanders.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough, actually, when I was in elementary school to meet a ethnobotanist who works in Indonesia, and she would come and she would take select students around. My school was it's a small private school, Princeton Friends School, in the woods in Princeton, actually located in a very historically rich area, which fascinated me growing up. And so this ethnobotanist would take us around and would show us the plants and their significance and the significance of the land and how basically almost like healthy land that's ecologically rich is worth more than land that is not ecologically rich, which were what most of our studies had been on. And that really inspired me. And she would, I became friends with her daughter, and we would hang out in their yard, and they had another creek there. And this was one of my favorite places to be growing up. And I soon found out that actually they planned to dig right through it and put a gas line right through it. And so at that point, I was invited to come to my first town meeting. And I was very young at the time. I was 10 or 11. I basically discussed what I had seen there. And I don't know if people took me seriously. I was a tiny little thing. But
just like you are now, you were probably very informed and intelligent and articulate. And the people on the, you know, the town council and so forth, and must have been pretty blown away by the knowledge that a 10 or 11 year old brought, you know? I would have been, yeah.
Oh, then I started to sample that site regularly, and I still do to this day. And I started to look at the health there, and I started to chart it and compare it to other sites in the area. And I actually identified that there were a series of macroinvertebrate families living there that did not occur in other waterways that were specific to that one area, an indicator of why that should have been preserved. I also noticed that it had extremely low nutrient pollution, so why add more? I also was able to notice that downstream of it were rivers where people get their drinking water. So I brought this data to the Princeton Town Board, and I just presented it, and they ended up, rather than going through the creek, they tunneled under it. Something that is a lot more costly and a lot more time consuming to hire a lot more people, but they did it. They were true to their word, they did it. And they actually reseeded also the bank of the creek with native species.
Awesome.
And although there was a slight health decline during the construction, it bounced back and it's doing very well.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. That must be so satisfying to see science result in a change to policy in, mm-hmm. in your community.
And actually, at the end of that meeting, someone came up to me and told me that in a room full of opinions, I was the only one who brought the data.
Wow, that's awesome.
I was
awesome.
Very proud of that
moment. Yeah. Well, so you have, what do you think you're going to do next? What are you thinking about for college and beyond and, you know?
Well, currently I am trying to building a lab in New Jersey to make DNA barcoding more accessible for getting like genetic data and more information on local waterways. Mm. I have started it up as a citizen science project. Starting this fall, we have school groups coming in, and students will begin to learn about DNA barcoding and how important it is for environmental assessment. Mm-hmm. This will also grow pre-existing databases and strengthen DNA barcoding all around. For college, I really plan on studying genetics. I want to look at pioneering new ways of environmental genetics, so assessing environment, looking at genetics.
Yeah, fascinating. No decisions or anything on college yet. Working on
no
that,
final decisions
seeing
yet.
Seeing where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fantastic. I mean, there's so much happening. The science around genetics seems to be just exploding.
Definitely,
and we're just discovering fascinating, amazing things, and it's definitely. It's a field of the future, but it's kind of arriving now in a lot of ways. Very interesting. Well, I thank you so much for the conversation. Congratulations on representing the United States with the winning the prize there. And,
thank you.
You know, best of luck here in Stockholm with the competition. No matter how it turns out, you have plenty of success and good things ahead of you. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here.
Words on Water.